You're listening to Gillespie Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com. And welcome to Gillespie here on this Tuesday night in Internet Radio Excellence here on FTRradio.com. I want to welcome you all just coming in from the Snark Factor as they enter their second week at the 8 o'clock hour. We are pleased, since we were off last week, we are pleased to be following Fingers and Duke and Amy and the whole gang over there over at the Snark Factor. And following them up. So those of you who are in the chat room, as you listen to our first new show since the Snark Factor time change, thanks for sticking around. This is probably the biggest group we've had in the chat room for a while. But that said, I would like to introduce my co-host and a regular feature in the chat room, Miss Susie Moore, the Smoozy Q.
Oh, Susie Q.
Susie, hello. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Now, we saw you recently, and I say we. I don't mean the royal we, because Mark Warner is not with us tonight, and frankly,
no.
We should count our blessings. Mark Warner and I, and the Fingers Malloy, and our good friend Matt Brinkman, got to spend some time with you this
weekend. Lucky you guys.
I know. Tell me
I
about.
Actually was going to say I got to spend time with you. I was happy to be there for a visit this weekend and help celebrate.
That's right. The Smoozy Q was in town to celebrate what I like to call Fingers Bash 2012. It was Fingers Malloy's birthday.
Yes.
This past Friday. And we got
31st.
To, yes. And his 31st, was it?
Yeah.
Wow. He's aged... like fine cheese. anyway, so his birthday was last Friday, and we got together here in lovely Indianapolis to celebrate Fingers' birthday.
We did.
On Saturday, and I wasn't able to spend the entire evening with
no,
the gang.
No, but you spent a very fun part of it.
Oh, it was a blast.
I laughed so hard at dinner, I thought my sides were going to split.
I haven't laughed that hard in a long time.
Oh my gosh, no.
Now, I could give credit to the Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale, which is fantastic.
It is pretty good.
But no, it was just downright hilarity was going on that night.
It's a good combination of people and senses of humor.
Yes, it was. And there was definitely, if you were following Twitter at all on Saturday night, and really, why were you? But if you were... you saw some interesting tweets coming from us that night. And from my love for the 90s, it's not, or excuse me, 80s, mid 80s.
Yeah.
It was a dramedy.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Starring the male super action hero, Bruce Willis. Moonlighting.
Did you say Bruce Willis was in it?
Yeah, Bruce Willis was definitely in
Was he really in it?
He was definitely in Moonlighting. Yeah. Yes, I proclaimed that I enjoyed the show Moonlighting during the 80s. And then Mark Warner breaks down into singing Never Gonna Get It from En Vogue.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you, those in the chat room, which is more manly? Watching and enjoying Bruce Willis in the show Moonlighting, or enjoying the stylings of En Vogue, singing En Vogue at the table. Susie, you were there.
I was there. I was there. I can attest
sitting,
to it.
You were sitting next to him.
I almost fell off my stool.
All of us did. We're like, wait, what did you just sing?
No, I'm just going to have to weigh in, Josh. I do believe that being a fan of the Bruce Willis character David Addison on Moonlighting and his sidekick Snot. Oh, I mean, wait, Booger? What was his name again?
Booger. He was Booger in Revenge of the Nerds. All right, that's how I remember him. That's the only way I remember him. But he does play the character Snot in the show American Dad. So there's a correlation.
There is there's a running theme with that guy. But exactly. I consider that more manly than busting out the En Vogue lyrics. So
yeah, that was just
siding
wrong.
With doing that. But it's because I was a Moonlighting fan, too, so.
You're not helping. But, of course, I did not remember the name of Bruce Willis's character.
I did. But we also agreed during that dinner that I was actually probably less of a chick than the rest of you guys were, so.
That's not fair.
So, but if my point is, if I liked Moonlighting, then really...
Well, that's just, you know, Fingers happened to bring it up, and he said it was less manly. And I point to the fact that the star of Die Hard, The Sixth Sense, 12 Monkeys, any other movie that involves action of some sort usually involves Bruce Willis.
Sure.
And this is not me just saying that I'm a huge Bruce Willis fan, although, you know, I enjoy his work. But this is me saying that, you know, every person gets their start somewhere. As you mentioned, George Clooney was in Facts of Life.
That's right. That's right.
Because you had to bring up Facts of Life, being like, see, that was okay. George Clooney was in it. Oh, gosh.
Well, so, and then, yes, you were not able to join us for the later part of the evening.
No.
Some gambling at the lovely Shelbyville, Indiana casino, the Indiana Grand, I think it's called.
Yes, it used to be known as Indiana Live, but they changed the name. Probably accordingly. Oh, I've actually never been to that casino, even though it is just it's an hour from me, which is actually
It wasn't a bad drive.
Yeah. But what did you think of Indiana's casinos and what hilarity went on there, if any? I mean, I'm sure you guys had a good time.
There was plenty of hilarity. We started the evening, or the casino part of the evening, out in the casino bar where DJ Hammer was breaking down the tunes for us, and he was breaking down some great tunes.
Hold on. Let me see if I still have this, because I got a text from Matt Brinkman, who was with you guys that night.
Yes, he was.
And this is the text that I got from Matt. The DJ is interesting at the casino. He's making it feel like a bad high school party.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I said, but what do you expect? It's Shelbyville.
Right.
And we're not talking like Simpsons version of Shelbyville, though it's probably fairly close. he said, it's not surprising, but this is a borderline disaster. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether to laugh or cry.
Right. It was, well, and I should describe DJ Hammer to you. He was a white guy with
a
button-down shirt and a tie on.
Oh.
And not one of the skinny ties, like, from the A. I mean, like, your average business cash guy, you know? I mean, he didn't look the part. And he was joined by, we dubbed her Mustang Sally, a woman who was probably solidly into her 50s,
ooh,
had long, dark, kind of frizzy, certainly not smooth and silky hair, but it was kind of the wild child look to her. She was wearing, like, a black tank top and jeans, and she was out on the dance floor the entire night, shaking her groove thing.
Ah.
And she was a sight to behold. And then there was the mullet. I think you saw the mullet. I think
because Mark Warner said that I actually did end up joining him. that's what he tweeted me. And yeah, I saw the mullet.
There was a serious mullet going on. There was the blonde lady who had jeans that were low riders on and didn't realize that when she did her little sexy maneuver where she bend down to, like, during the dance, she was showing us everything she had on the backside.
Oh, let me guess. Was there also a lower back tattoo to go with that?
I looked away.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Before I could be too terribly scarred, but I know we got a good view of her thong. So, she was nice. And then the bartender lady who I dubbed Dorothy Hamill, because she had kind of a longer Dorothy Hamill do, complete with the slightly curled bangs, and was so very serious and humorless as we were trying to get drinks from her. You know, you and I both know, everyone who listens to the show knows, Fingers Malloy is one of the funniest people on the face of the planet.
He is. And we're not kidding that our sides were about ready to burst
at this point in time. So his hilarity was even... it was on. She wasn't catching any of it. She was just straight face, no humor whatsoever.
And
so I called it.
He was delivering lines as dryly as possible, wasn't he?
He was, and she was picking up none of it.
I am sorry I missed this.
You missed a lot of fun, and we did do some gambling. We did a little video poker, and I think Fingers might have left the casino that night even.
Oh.
In other words, he had won back everything that he'd spent on drinks and dinner and everything else. So.
Hey, not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. Well, way to go.
So I think he would say it was a good birthday celebration.
That is phenomenal, you know. And I was just happy to be a part of it. What I could. We had hoped that the Irish Duke II, the ED mm-hmm. of FTR Radio, Mr. Thomas LeDuc, would be able to join us. Unfortunately,
I know.
He was not able to. Claiming at the last minute that he had not received every single email that we had sent him all week.
I was going to say, even though he clearly was being bombarded with them, that long email chain.
Oh, yeah. That was lengthy. Definitely lengthy. As you guys try to figure out, where is everyone going to be staying? Because, I mean, you know, we had lots of plans. I mean, we ventured as far as where we were going to be going. We could have been downtown doing some karaoke. Because if you're with Fingers Malloy, mm-hmm. You think karaoke,
right?
And we all know that he does a phenomenal rendition of Prince's Kiss.
Yes, he does.
Which I'm sure you can find pretty much anywhere on YouTube because it's been videotaped quite a few times. but we weren't able to do that because the one place that we were looking at had a band playing that night, and so darn either way, you know, casinos are fun, and
yeah.
So that was. I'm glad you guys were able to do that. I'm glad that we were able to celebrate Fingers' 31st birthday.
I was too.
Yes, a fine cottage cheese to kind of go back to. That ages well, right?
Exactly.
That's what I thought. Well, you know, we have a lot to discuss tonight. We were originally going to have a guest.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. Senator from Indiana, Dan Coats, was supposed to be on tonight. But lo and behold, again, we're venturing. Hopefully, we'll see things are coming up that may have an effect on the show. We'd hope to be live by now, but we're not.
Right.
So we're recording this on Monday. We're actually recording this as the Snark Factor is airing live.
Yes, we are.
And so being this is Monday night, we were hoping to have on Senator Dan Coats, but Harry Reid. Good old Dingy Harry, one of our favorites,
mm-hmm.
Happened to call votes at the last minute, and Senator Coats actually had to be on the floor. So
I think he did it just to mess with us, honestly.
He did, you know, kind of like how Todd Akin had to say something really stupid right mm-hmm. before he was supposed to be on.
Mm-hmm.
They did it to spite us.
Mm-hmm.
They know we asked the hard questions, and they
I
knew,
think so.
But it wasn't, you know, Dan Coats wasn't spiting us. He knew that we were going to ask the hard questions, but he was going to give some good answers.
Uh-huh.
And we were definitely going to be putting Senator Reid on the spot, but and I kind of took this as you know, he wanted to be on the show tonight. He really did because Mark Warner, who does a lot of work in setting up our interviews, we had heard from the senator that he wanted to do the show because he had remembered being on here. It's been a while, but he had remembered being on the show a while back, and he's like, oh, I like those guys, like yeah. That's right. We're good people. And he hadn't met you, Susie.
No, I know.
He would have been introduced to the Smoozy Q. And if you've been introduced to the Smoozy Q, you know life is better from then on out.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Ah, that's why they call me Silk. so unfortunately, we will not be discussing the fiscal cliff with Senator Coates tonight like we had hoped. But we will still be discussing the fiscal cliff. We'll also be talking about this... little shenanigans going on in the House between Boehner and the truly fiscal conservatives. Some of them got booted.
There's a little fur flying there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's it's crazy times in D.C. right now. But so we will delve into that here in a little bit, and we will come right back. You are listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this. Something moving,
feeling newer. Hey, fellow conservatives. When you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Mocha Choco, whatever, and the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats at HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
We'll be right back. welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Well, I just want to alert our listeners, as I mentioned at the top of the show, one of our fellow sidekicks here on the show, our team member, Mark Warner, was unable to join us. He actually had to, he has a job, and sometimes it makes him work in the evenings, and so he is staffing someone tonight. And so he, before we started the show tonight, he emailed us saying that he wasn't going to be able to participate. And so he texted me and said, did you get my email? And I responded, yes. And I followed that up with, we made sure to make fun of you and proclaim your love for En Vogue. To which he swore at me. I don't know why.
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine either. What's with the potty mouth?
I don't know.
That Mark Warner. I tell
you. His hair trigger temper.
What hair? Have you met Mark?
Well,
there's nothing up there.
Good point.
Yeah. Anyway, so Mark is going off a verbal cliff there.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about the fiscal cliff.
Nice segue.
Thank you. I work on these. I think about these during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who have kind of tuned out during this, and frankly, after the election, I don't blame you.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't blame you. I mean, we've had more than our fair share of breaks since the election on this show. More than people probably would have come to expect. Mm-hmm. And so we're finally doing a show here talking about the fiscal cliff after, you know, a couple of shows talking about communications and messaging and whatnot. But basically what we're coming down to is the Bush tax cuts are expiring at the end of the year. The across-the-board tax cuts. The president would like to extend the bottom two for the middle class and the lower class tax cuts and raise them on the upper class or the top 2%, which I find slightly interesting because this entire year, or seemingly what felt like this entire year, we were being slammed about the top 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know where this other percent came in. So we're hitting the top 2%. I want to know how the 98th percent here, I want to know how that 1% feels.
Mm-hmm.
About being dragged into this this particular equation.
I bet they're thrilled.
Oh, they're loving it. They're loving it. And side note, I saw today on Your World with Neil Cavuto, which I'll watch Fox News, but it turns off right at the 5.
Mm-hmm.
I can't take. I'm sorry, people. I know you probably all of you guys love the great Gutfels and the Dana Perinos. Dana's been on the show. I like Dana, and you know I like Andrea Tantoros and whoever else that they have on that show. Bob Beckel, love him or leave him, whatever. But I just got to turn it off at 5. So. But he had on Steven Crowder today. And Steven Crowder apparently released a video recently where he basically exposes liberals for actually being Republicans. Because he talks about the fiscal cliff and he talks about the so-called top 2% getting the taxes raised,
mm-hmm.
Which include people who earn an income of $250,000 or over. So he talks to people who are in their 20s. They're probably about Crowder's age, maybe a little bit younger, a little bit older, you know, but in their 20s. And they're all like, yeah, over $250,000 or $250,000, that's not rich. That's not rich at all. And so he gets them all to say this and agree with him. And then he closes it with, well, you know what? You sound like a Republican. And they all shriek in horror, which is kind of funny. But that, I mean, that's essentially what we're looking at here is that the president wants to increase taxes on people who make $250,000 or above. And the Republicans have fought back saying, you know, how about we do spending cuts instead? You know, why don't we look at entitlement reform instead? And throughout this whole thing, we've had the whole issue with the pledge, the no new taxes pledge, the Grover
mm-hmm.
Norquist thing.
Mm-hmm.
To which I will say, and this is going to make me come off as a rhino, but I prefer an elected official's tax pledge, or they're a pledge to the constituents rather than to a man. Just saying, just throwing that out there, that, you know, they're more responsible to their constituents than they are to Grover Norquist.
Well, now, Josh,
I know.
I'm fairly certain that Grover would correct you there and say that the pledge isn't to him, but to the constituents. However, I realize the tension that's building there, and this has been driving me crazy for the past month since fiscal cliff talk has started to get hot.
Mm-hmm.
All this talk about raising revenue, which so frequently by both the media and people on both the left and the right, but particularly on the left, is conflated with raising tax rates, because
yes,
there's more than one way to raise revenues. You can raise tax rates if you're at the right point on the Laffer curve.
Mm-hmm.
You can close loopholes and simplify, streamline the tax code.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also promote growth, because you know what happens when you have growth? You get more revenue. So I see this back and forth where, you know, and obviously the president's dug in on, I mean, he wants to stick it to that top 2%, because he doesn't seem to be willing to listen to or entertain the idea of any other possible ways of increasing revenue. He just wants to stick it to that top 2%. And I just, it's just driving me batty the way that's being, you know, thrown about like it's all the same thing, when there are suggestions that are out there from the right that mm-hmm. have to do with raising revenue, but not raising tax rates.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think it should be addressed about the idea of raising tax rates, though, that if they're done correctly, and as you mentioned, you know, you pointed to the Laffer curve,
mm-hmm.
that you can, and I talked to a financial analyst that I know here in town, and he said that even because I was talking to him in terms of the stock market,
mm-hmm.
and I said, you know, raising taxes, that's just going to screw with the stock market. I mean, it's going to plummet. And he said, not necessarily. If you address tax increases a certain way, if they're done correctly, which they can be,
mm-hmm.
then the stock market can actually be positively affected. It's when you go over a certain percentage, and honestly, I forget what that particular percentage mm-hmm. is.
Well,
go ahead.
I was just saying, and I mean, another factor that plays into how the market reacts is not just it's the uncertainty that, you know, of what's going to happen in the future. So when you have, let's say you have a plan put forth that's very clear cut and says, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to streamline this. We're going to do this, and here's how it's going to be. That has a much better effect on the market than this sort of, well, we're going to stretch this out for a while, and we might do this, we might do that, and we're not really sure. It's that uncertainty that breeds a lot of the volatility in the market.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, yeah, so it can be approached in a positive way. And so what we need to avoid volatility. And I'm afraid that what the president is encouraging, and in fact, outright demanding.
Mm-hmm.
is going to cause a serious amount of volatility in the market, and we're going to see a prolonged recession.
Yeah.
And it's not going to help. And he refuses, absolutely refuses, to listen to any other alternatives when it comes to bringing in revenue.
No.
And that's, you know, addressing spending cuts, addressing entitlement reform. These things need to be done, okay? We don't need to do them at the grandiose level that frankly we want to do as Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we want massive entitlement reform, okay? You know what? I'm willing to take a little bit here and there. I'll do a little give and take.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the president says that he wants a balanced approach. And I had sent you an article earlier that was on Drudge.
It's right.
From AP News, my way. Basically saying that the president's just not listened to any of these. He's absolutely not. And I think it was, I can't remember if it was that particular article or if it was one from Breitbart that I read earlier, but basically saying that I think it was Boehner who said that the president is wanting a balanced approach, but he's not offering any balance.
He's not offering any balance. He's not offering any specifics. I mean, he's literally saying, "Oh, well, we'll look at certain spending cuts," but he's not willing to name any of them.
No, and
guess
the speaker,
what? It's not still the campaign.
Exactly. The speaker is definitely pressing, and rightfully so. Now, granted, Speaker Boehner hasn't done a bang up job with this, but he is pressing for specifics in terms of spending cuts, and the president. I mean, it's like he's just probably laughing at him, and. It obviously it is frustrating. It's frustrating for a lot of people, especially within our own party, to see that there is no movement whatsoever. And then this was definitely in the AP article, where it was talking about how the president, he's not just asking for tax increases. He's taking this a step further by saying that, you know, any further debt ceiling increases should be at the purview of the president and no one else.
Right. I love that. I love that little twist. Hey, I know. Let's consolidate more power in the executive and leave it less subject to review by Congress. So just give me all the power and we'll be good.
Where does this guy get off? I'm sorry. It's, you know, yeah, I just said, I just picked on Grover Norquist. All right. And I'm going to show you how balanced I am here. This is effing nuts. Okay. Mm-hmm. You do not do that. There is a reason we have a constitution. There is a reason we have three branches of government. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. We gave the president 2 years of giving him anything that he wanted and he got it. And you know what? Our deficit just increased dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You cannot blame. This is the president's economy. And we have these differing factions within the conservative movement who say, go ahead, just let it go off the cliff. The Democrats will own it. Mm-mm. And I have yet to see how the Democrats will own this, despite the fact that they are the ones demanding it.
It doesn't matter how loud you scream. It's not going to be ever, ever, ever portrayed that way.
And in a sense, that's what Crowder was even saying, is that he was talking about how the Republicans are doing a terrible job with messaging. And I'm like, oh, yes, yes, thank you. Someone who's finally saying it, at least on, you know, on Fox News. I wish it wasn't a comedian. No offense to right. Steven Crowder. But still, I wish it was someone who had a little bit more clout to him. Someone who had, I don't know, just not a comedian. Okay, right. not a radio show host, and I guess that implicates me.
Yes, so you're not allowed to give your thoughts on it on
so
Fox
I,
News.
No, all I right. can't, I can't, I can't. But I know I'm holding this I'm raising the bar here because I think we do need to continue to raise the bar in terms of who is spreading the message and how it's getting out there and who needs to call people out. But the fact is we don't have people calling anybody out, and it's entirely frustrating because we have a growing civil war on our own side, which we're coming to the end of this segment. So we'll probably need to carry this on over and start talking about the little civil war we got brewing on our side regarding this thing, which that's always fun, right? Oh, mm-hmm. Gosh, any day that ends in Y is a day that Republicans will be battling each other. I know that much.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So we'll get into that next. But the insanity with the fiscal cliff, I mean, essentially we have Congress has added an additional week. They will be meeting the week of the 17th in hopes that they get something done. You know, they're going to be pushing this against Christmas. I remember when Obamacare was coming up and this went to Christmas. It went to Christmas Eve.
I'm having visions of congressional Christmas parties and the drinks flowing freely. They might actually get something done then.
You know, if they couldn't get anything done after watching Lincoln, although the Senate needed to pass legislation just to make sure that they could have popcorn and drinks to watch mm-hmm. Lincoln. Holy cow. That's what we're passing bills on.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C. people. Washington, D.C.
Our elected officials. God love them.
God love them. Anyway, so we're going to continue talking about our elected officials in the next segment. So stick around for that. The GOP Civil War, it's fantastic. You're listening to Gillespie. We'll be right back after this. She came down to heal me.
Hi, this is Amelia Hamilton, author of One Nation Under God, a book for little patriots, and you are listening to FTR Radio.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. And we are continuing our coverage of the fiscal cliff crisis. Dun dun.
Gotta flash that in bold across the screen.
I wonder if I can isolate the music from Fox News, that, you know, their alert stuff that is just, it's freakishly long.
Yeah,
I mean, even Megyn Kelly was saying you need an alert music for the alert.
Right.
Just so you know it's coming. It really kind of, it starts, you're like, whoa! And then it's like, it's not ending! I miss their old music. Anyway, Okay, so the GOP Civil War. We've been talking about the fiscal cliff. Yeah. And Speaker Boehner has introduced a plan. And conservatives, fiscal conservatives, are saying it doesn't go far enough. And on top of this, I believe it was last week. Actually, I think it was last Tuesday is when this story broke. There was a purging, supposedly done by Speaker Boehner. Although Breitbart is on their website, they are claiming that it actually could have been the work of the whip, Kevin McCarthy, calling it a new form of McCarthyism. How cute.
Oh.
Yes, yes. Anyway, oh gosh, I just realized we didn't even get to the whole dependency thing.
That yeah. article,
oh, geez. Okay, we may have to get back to that. Anyway, so Civil War. Yes, Speaker Boehner, supposedly, with the help of Kevin McCarthy, supposedly, ditched Justin Amash, David Schweikert, and...
Huelskamp.
Yes, Huelskamp from Kansas.
And, is it Jones?
I can't remember the other.
There's a fourth. Shoot. I just saw it.
Well, either way, four staunchly, like, fiscally conservative. We're not even talking about socially conservative here.
No.
Fiscally conservative Republicans were booted from prime financial committees in favor of what Speaker Boehner said were other conservatives. But the one thing that seemingly was noted here was that all these guys voted against particular CRs or other forms of financial legislation that they claimed did not go far enough. Though those, in the defense of those particular members, the legislation actually did pass. So it's not like as if their votes actually killed the bills.
Mm-mm.
So we have that going on. And then today on Breitbart, this is an article from Matthew Boyle entitled Rand Paul to Join Protest of House GOP Leadership Tax Deal. The hey? Okay. Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul, Georgia Republican Rep. Paul Brown, and others will join Tea Party group theteaparty.net to denounce the House GOP's leadership caving on taxes later this week. That's right, because we caved. If we can't get everything we want, then just screw it all.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's where I'm going to get real with you, people. And this may bother some of you folks in the chat room. If you're still sticking around, and I really hope that you are. And frankly, I thank
it
you that you
be.
Are. I hope that they are. Otherwise, I'm going to stick Smoozy after you.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want that.
No.
No, she sounds awesome on the show. You know her as a bubbly, wonderful personality. But don't you dare cross her.
You don't want me mad.
No, you don't. No, you don't. So, okay, I'm gonna get a little bit real on you folks. And the part of negotiation, much like the president, he wants an insane deal. He wants full and total control, and yet he still wants to blame the GOP if it goes bad. Okay. What we're compromising. It is not an evil word. It is not a bad word, okay? There are steps that you take to making a deal. And part of the deal is that you have to give a little bit. That's a part that President Obama apparently doesn't seem to understand, but that's the part that we seem to understand. And when we do understand that, yes, I know that we seem to get taken advantage of, and that's a problem. We don't stick to our guns. That's the problem, is that we will make the compromise, but we don't stick to our guns afterwards. Here's the deal, is that if you're going to make a compromise, in a sense, not that I'm a perfect parent, far from it. But you know what? If you want if you want parenting to work out sometimes deals have to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And even when that's cleaning up the room, okay, what are we going to do to get this done? How are we going to work together to make sure that this gets done? All right, but you have to stick to it. Otherwise, the child will find inconsistencies and they will continue to exploit them. And that's the problem, is that the Democrats have continually found our inconsistencies and they've continued to exploit them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see it as conservatives. We look at it and we say, oh, hey, they're caving. Okay, that's all we see. We have blinders to everything else. We just see that we're caving. And automatically, if we don't go stick to our guns and demand that we get all the entitlement cuts that need to happen, that we get all the spending cuts that we want, and that we lower rates to zero. If we don't lower rates to zero, then we're all, it's war. Okay, well, obviously that's not even remotely possible, and that's a slight exaggeration, but...
Still slight.
Just slight. But that's, I mean, seriously, that's what happens. Okay? The part is, compromise isn't a bad thing. There are certain things that you have to compromise on if you're in order to get a deal. So, for instance, I am not for tax rates increasing. But if there is a deal to get done that involves tax rates increasing and we get specified spending cuts and entitlement and maybe some path towards entitlement reform, you know, I want to see things. This is how we stay consistent. You need to insert sunset legislation. All right. And I know that these things, this is, now people may think, Josh, you're just going off the cliff here, and you're not going to get anything that you want, all right? Maybe, but these are part of talks. I know sunset talks usually don't get anywhere, but you have to bring them up, okay? Because or enactment dates, okay? You put in the legislation, we start seeing entitlement reform by such and such a date. You know, don't put it 2 or 3 years out. Obviously, we know it's a campaign ploy. We know we need to make it closer, all right? 6 months out, we need to aggressively address entitlement reform. We put in the legislation that this is what we're going to be. This is what's going to be addressed. All right. So you have this long to prepare for it. You have this long to know how to deal with the ramifications of that particular entitlement reform or this particular spending cut. And you work around it. You know what? That's called budgeting. This is how people work. This is how everyday life occurs. All right. If I want something and I have to, you know, if there is any negotiating or compromising with, you know, whether it's a fellow coworker or a boss or even my spouse, you know, I don't get everything I want. There's got to be compromise.
That's terrible. No.
You don't like that?
Kidding.
No. Oh, okay.
You should get everything you want, Josh.
No, I shouldn't. No, yes, I do think I should get everything I want, but I know I won't. So, you know, I'm not going to be stupid about it.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to be patriarchal or a dictator in this house just because I can't get everything I want. You know?
She's listening, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Smart man.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a smart man. It should be known. She may not want me saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway because she's awesome. It is Mrs. Silk's birthday today, and I say that as Tuesday is Silk's the Mrs. S, her birthday.
Happy birthday to her!
Yes, happy birthday to Mrs. Silk.
Yeah.
She's younger than Fingers. We'll put it that way.
Oh. So she's just turning 29.
Yes, she is. Oh, please, 26. She's probably hearing this, and so happy birthday to Mrs. Silk.
Yay.
Chat room, please, if you could, say happy birthday to Mrs. Silk. There needs to be compromise.
Right. Josh, I mean, I'm the first one to agree that you have to be willing to compromise. Anybody who studies political wheeling and dealing and or who studied any negotiating tactics, as I did when I was in law school. I was a TA for the negotiations class.
Perfect.
You know, in order to get progress when you have opposing viewpoints involved or opposing interests, you're going to have to find ways to compromise. The key is not whether or not you compromise. It's how you compromise. It's how, you know, you have to do it in smart ways. You have to make sure that you're primary goals are being protected and it's set up in a way, it's like a chess game almost, so that your ultimate goals are going to be affected and you're not giving up more than you can stand to give up. But I just feel like every time, you know, compromise starts being put on the table, unfortunately, I think it was the Rick Wilson article that you sent to me earlier, pointed out the fact that, they start, you know, as soon as Republican leadership starts worrying about how they're going to look in the New York Times, they cave, and they do cave. It's not just compromise. It's rolling over and playing to the unfriendly media and, you know, the progressive hardline Democrats, and it's totally ineffective. So then nothing gets accomplished. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, that is how I feel about the Senate. I feel like I take a different view of the House because I've worked in the House.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there is a little bit more action. They're a little bit more willing to be, you know, all up in your piece about things.
Mm-hmm.
But as I think one of was this, I can't remember if this was addressed in the Rick Wilson column or if it was somewhere else. But the whole as we were contemplating how tired Jim DeMint was of the whole. My dear colleague, or you know, this whole, you know, that my good friend. No, you're not good friends. In fact, you hate that person. But Senate decorum requires that you refer to that person as my friend.
Mm-hmm. And it's like the verbal air kiss.
Yes. Except I mean all the air kisses I give. Oh, because I usually just give them to my kids. So yes, see, Silk knows what he's doing. But you are exactly right, Smoozy. Exactly right. I mean, and that is absolutely frustrating, but you also bring up a very good segue.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've come to the end of this segment about warring factions within the GOP, basically admitting that you all suck, just start working together, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Put your egos aside, get something done, okay? And it doesn't. And we're not asking you to pass the president's plan, because we're not. Just get something done and make sure it better involves spending cuts. See? Is that so hard?
Shouldn't be.
Okay. So next we're going to be talking about Jim DeMint and his departure.
Yeah.
So stick around. You're listening to Gillespie. We'll be right back after this.
FTR Radio is from the right radio. Online at FTRradio.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com with me this entire show, because it's just been the two of us bantering back and forth, is the Smoozy Q.
Hello.
And, you know, we don't do these kinds of shows often, Susie.
No.
And it's fun to have this kind of back and forth.
It is.
And if we were live, we would definitely be entreating the people in the chat room. And again, we thank them all for being there. But I want to bring up the departure of Senator DeMint from the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
I know this news is a week old, so we're a little behind. But there was a fantastic article written on Ricochet by the Florida political consultant Rick Wilson. No political consultant is not a dirty word or dirty words, especially when we're talking about someone like Rick Wilson.
Right.
But I got to be honest, just to say that when I first heard the news that Jim DeMint was leaving the Senate, my initial reaction was, I do not weep for the loss of Jim DeMint.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the howling. Okay, conservatives, it's okay. I can say that. I like Jim DeMint as a person, all right? Here's my impression of Jim DeMint. Class act. He sticks for conservative principles, be they social or fiscal. But you know what? He really started making it a little bit too much about him. I felt like he was becoming a sideshow and apparently your dog agrees. But I felt like he was becoming a sideshow in the Senate, that he was, you know, it made me want to bring out Dr. Phil and say, it's not about you.
Mm.
You know, the Senate Conservative Fund, it seemed to be more about Jim DeMint than even really electing allies for himself. That said, my tune changed a bit when I read the article by Rick Wilson. And again, I was telling Susie off the air that it's been a couple days since I read it, so I'm not exactly, it's not fresh. But what I gathered, and why I see that this is a smart move, and a move that I can respect, is that obviously DeMint realized he was getting nowhere in the Senate. I don't see him as a quitter, but I do understand the frustration. Because as you were talking, Susie, in the last segment, the Senate seems to be once the New York, once, you know, they want to get in the New York Times. They want to be approved. They want to be like, please like us, please like us.
Right.
And you can't be that way in the Senate. Okay, you can't be that way in Washington. Pony up, grow a backbone. You know, get work done.
Lead,
yes. And so Jim DeMint, obviously frustrated with the fact that, you know, there was nowhere to go in leadership because Mitch McConnell was surrounding himself with his cronies. He had to go someplace where he could lead.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that there was an opening at the Heritage Foundation. Not saying I would have applied because obviously I would have gotten the job. But...
I don't know how widely publicized that was.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I don't think it was. But Jim DeMint made this move, and I think it was a really smart move because he is right on fiscal issues. You know, and frankly, I don't want him to be someone, because let's be honest. Heritage really came onto the scene when Reagan took up their mantle, when he ran for president in 1980 and applied a lot of their plans to his plans.
Mm-hmm.
Helping turn around the recession of the 80s. I don't know if we'll have that with Jim DeMint. I actually kind of hope that we do. But we'll be able to see his ideas used, I think, in a better way. He won't be making this about, I hope he won't be making this about Jim DeMint, that he'll be making this about sound conservative fiscal policy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's my hope as well. I mean, I thought that Wilson's article made a really good point about the fact that, you know, and it makes sense, you know, at a certain point, being in the Senate has a lot of advantages. There's a lot of power there. There's a lot of ways you can make a difference, mm-hmm. but there's also a lot of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the microphone. I mean, people are, you know, people who are politically attuned know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
So when he does come out with stuff, people are going to pay attention to it. And now he's trading forums, but he's probably actually setting up a situation where he's in a better forum for expressing the conservative ideals that he feels so strongly about, and possibly pushing from the outside, if you will, to get them implemented and to get people more on board with them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, and I didn't mention talking about this earlier, but I think you can definitely bring some insight into this as well. I find it interesting that we see Jim DeMint move from the Senate to the Heritage Foundation,
mm-hmm.
a think tank, whereas we see Tea Party organizations, such as FreedomWorks, they're going through a bit of a transition themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
growing pains.
Yes, some growing pains. Now, FTR has a very good relationship with FreedomWorks, so mm-hmm. I will dance carefully, because we do not want to, we want to keep things smooth.
That's right.
Because we know that they do good over there.
Mm-hmm.
We know that they supply sometimes good advice. And I think that in a conversation we had with a mutual friend, that we think that they would be that they would do well if the way that they got into campaigns is if they took the candidates by the shoulders, shook them back and forth, and said, "Don't talk about abortion. Whatever you do, don't talk about abortion. Just don't. Just don't do it.
Zip it.
don't talk about anything reproductive. Just mm-hmm. don't." And you know, that would be sound advice. And I would thank FreedomWorks for that.
Oh, if
there
only
you
that
go.
Advice could have been doled out months ago.
Months ago.
months I can ago. Think of two fellas who could have really used that advice.
Probably at least two. At least two. Apparently, there was also a Republican up in either Washington State or Oregon who also deigned to venture into this particular mm-hmm. arena.
Never going to get it.
And it comes full circle. But, you know, honestly, you know, the departure of Dick Armey, I think, is probably a good move on his part as well.
Maybe.
It could be. I mean, there will be some growing pains for FreedomWorks, but it's not like they don't know people who could probably fill that void.
That's true. Absolutely. And the thing I think you're seeing with, you know, DeMint's move, with all the movement and stuff you're seeing right now, is people taking a step back and taking stock of what they've been focusing on the past couple years, and, you know, whether it's been effective and what they might need to do differently and how they might be doing it differently. So I think that's why you're seeing a lot of shifting right now.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if this plays out in any other groups. But, I mean, obviously it was pretty much in everyone's face when Dick Armey left, because he's been actively involved with FreedomWorks since, I believe it was 99 or 2000. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's been able to bring in some big money to that organization. He's been seen as a face of FreedomWorks. But obviously, Matt Kibbe has been a lot more actively involved. And so I'm sure we'll see, you know, they're just exchanging a 10-gallon hat and a bolo tie for sideburns.
Right. Right.
So we'll see how effective that is, and good luck to FreedomWorks in their in the new era.
Absolutely.
So to speak. We wish them well and effectiveness.
Yes.
But again, back to Dement. I think this will be good for Heritage. I don't think Heritage has actually had kind of a figurehead like this in a long time.
No.
I mean, outside, and I don't think Art Laffer was necessarily considered a figurehead.
I don't think so either. This is definitely putting a figurehead on it, as opposed to just sort of a faceless tank.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, the gentleman's name escapes me right now, but he wrote a book called Getting America Right. And I'm actually pulling it up right now, just so I can remember the gentleman's name. Ed Fulner.
Okay.
Did he leave?
I don't know.
So I would think that would be who Dement has taken over for. Ed Fulner, if you haven't read Getting America Right,
mm-hmm.
solid book.
Oh, I will have to check it out.
It's from about 2006, I think.
Nice.
But I remember getting it, and I was just like, this is really a well-written book. I mean, you know, don't get turned off by the fact that it actually has true conservative written on the front of it.
You didn't, Josh.
No, well, again, it was 2006. It was a younger, you know, less knowing Silk. But still, the principles that are in that book are solid. They are true conservative values that right. I think that, you know, regardless of whether I think that people should ignore Grover Norquist and actually adhere to their constituents' concerns, are things that should be applied to general fiscal sanity. And I think that Ed Fulner got it right in that one. So if Jim Dement is taking over for Ed Fulner, because he was the president of the Heritage Foundation, so it would make sense that I guess that's what's happening. But yes, Susie, as a former Democrat, I think you will read this book, and you won't be turned off by a true conservative. And if your friend who listened to the show a couple weeks ago, who is an independent, I think he if he can look past the fact that there is a that Newt Gingrich offers the foreword, and that it does say true conservative on the front, I think if he takes the book for what it is, he will find fiscal policies in there that even he could probably agree with.
Good to know.
It's a solid book, and I got that book about the time that I was reading Winning Right by parentheses cousin and parentheses Ed Gillespie. Crashing the Gates. And here is another book that every conservative needs to read. I kid you not. You will think I'm crazy. And because I very rarely delve into liberal wackos. And I consider this guy kind of along the Maddow, MSNBC, Chris Matthews kind of thing.
Mm.
But Marcos from Daily Kos wrote a book called Crashing the Gate in, I think it was also 2006.
Wow.
I think it came out in 2005. But basically, he was outlining what the Democrats needed to do to take back the House in 2006. And they did it. It was honestly kind of amazing to read after the fact, because everything he outlined, they did, and they won. And I was thinking to myself, even then, it's like, why can't conservatives do this? We should be doing this. And it was funny to compare the two, you know, reading Ed Gillespie's book to Marcos. Marcos was definitely much more in the lines of grassroots. I don't want to say militant.
Mm-hmm. A little more radical?
No, not even radical. That's not what I'm looking for. It's just that it was more workmanlike.
Okay.
I guess. even though it was, I mean, it's focusing on the net roots is what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed Gillespie's was more tactical, kind of more above the fray.
Oh, okay.
Kind of stuff, you know. And I don't know if that's just because he didn't want to get too deep in the weeds, but I mean, it was different. I mean, if you compare the two books, just in the way that they approached campaigning, I actually came away reading it thinking I can understand why Marcos was effective.
Mm.
So it's just because it was kind of funny. I read after the Republicans lost the House, I read Winning Right, and then Crashing the Gate.
Uh huh.
So obviously we didn't win right.
Interesting perspectives to.
It was. I think that kind of helped. I think that was the beginning. The beginning.
The education of Josh.
Something along those lines. I don't know. But again, people, I'm just saying you need to think outside the box.
Yeah.
Don't say that it needs to be this way or nothing is going to get done. Just don't do
Absolutely.
It. Okay, well, we've come to the end of the show.
We have.
Yes, because I'm looking at the time that we've been recording, and I'm like, oh, wow, we really need to end the show.
Wow.
Time
flies when you're having fun.
It really does. It really does. So, Susie.
Yes.
As we do at the end of every show, where can they find you on the internet?
They can find me on Twitter at SmoozyQ and at my blog at qwithaview.wordpress.com.
And you can find me at Josh Gillespie on the Twitters and joshgillespie.com. So, for the Smoozy Q, this has been Josh Gillespie, and you've been listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Thanks, and we'll see you again next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.
Don't speak like you used to.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?